are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, January 31st, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, but we're loaded up, folks. I'm not even wearing a collar today. Joining us from the program All In with Chris Hayes will be Chris Hayes from that same program. Also, from, wait, what, are they, do they have a name for that weekend thing? What is it? Deadspin's, like, Deadspin's?
We'll find out.
Oh. All right. Well, David Roth will be here. Formerly of Deadspin. Or of the former Deadspin. And also calling us live from the Sundance Film Festival. For the second time is our film reporter, Matthew Film Guy. Also on the program today, Lamar Alexander says no witnesses, giving Susan Collins a free vote and enabling Mitch McConnell his cover-up. With Iowa 3 days away, Sanders now neck and neck with Biden nationally, and beats Trump even when he is described as a socialist. In fact, it helps. Meanwhile, Trump administration pulls the trigger. Block grants coming to Medicaid. Meanwhile, cuts to that to follow. Don't know what's going on with our music. There we go. State Department warns against China travel over the coronavirus. Don't worry, Trump says this will all have a good ending for us. Brexit is on. The British are leaving. The British are leaving. It's going to take about 11 months, but they've jumped over the cliff, ladies and gentlemen. Meanwhile, U.S. has dropped a record number of bombs in Afghanistan in 2019. Congratulations. House repeals the 2002 Iraq authorization for use of military force, not to be confused with the 2001. And it turns out that Igor Fruman is a longtime buddy with Paul Manafort. That's weird. Senate investigators interview an IRS whistleblower about interference with a Pence and Trump audit. Meanwhile, the New York writer who accuses Trump of rape now is seeking his DNA as part of a suit. Pete Buttigieg's Spanish website is in English, and John Delaney exits the race. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, let me get this out of the way and apologize for the quality of my voice. I don't think I'm sick, but it's possible. We have lost at least one of our staff members to the flu. Jamie is sick. You might want to reach out to her on Twitter. Michael is out today. Brendan and Matt are here. I am here, too. I don't sound well, but I feel fine. So the suffering, I can assure you, will be all yours, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get to this quick. Joe Biden now, apparently his staff has caught on and realizes that we cannot allow Joe Biden to get into a situation where he attempts to beat up voters who come up and ask him a question. He's so mad that Bernie Sanders has reminded people that Joe Biden spent the vast majority of his career bragging about his desire and his ability to cut Social Security, because that's what made him a tough guy. He was going to do the hard decisions, going to make the hard choices, and that is to cut Social Security for other people, not for him, of course, but I mean for other people. And they've wised up, and now they have given him a. When I first heard the story, I thought they had given him a talking point sheet that he's supposed to use when he. But instead of he can't even deliver it. He just hands it to the people. Watch this.
Mr. Biden, just a clarification on Social Security record from earlier. What is this?
Vice President, do you think Bernie Sanders would be a risk for the party?
You
asked,
but
I'm
ready up for you, so you knew.
Thank you, but how should voters consider this?
So what happened is, I think it was a reporter said, you know, well, what do you say about your record on Social Security? And Biden gives him a card and says, we knew you were going to ask, so we wrote it up for you. And we did a... We zoomed in on what this card said, and here it is. Oh, no, where's the top part? Yeah, there it is. Okay. It says, Bernie false attack on Social Security. Oh, Sedurity. Hi, if I've handed this to you, I am probably lost. Is there any chance you know where my car is? If not, do you mind leading me to the nearest political staff-looking guy? Come on, man. Hey, Betty Boop, go vote for someone else, okay, Corn Pop? The hair on my legs are only now drying. That's a very weird message he's trying to put out there to fight back on the Social Security thing.
I don't think he's getting good advice from his staff.
I think it was a mistake to have a card written up, but this is not what I would write. Let's actually go into the actual card, because we can see it. We can freeze frame it, and... It's worth seeing what it is his talking points are. He's, even though they have taken the time to write this, he's lying. I'm sorry, folks. It's just, he's lying. It says Bernie false attack on Social Security. Just give me one more frame so I can get it straight. Okay. The video ignored the complete passage, which showed Biden wanted Social Security and Medicare protected. PolitiFact called it false. Who cares? Paul Krugman called it a severe. I don't care. And the fact is that when they would say stuff like, we want Social Security and Medicare protected, the way that they would do this. Yeah, here it is. We want Social Security and Medicare protected. The way that they would do this when they wanted to cut Social Security was they say, like, for the sake of saving Social Security, we need to cut it. I mean, so much so, I don't know if people remember this story, but when the outfit Social Security works about, I don't know when it was, maybe it was in 2009 or 2010, I can't remember exactly, proposed something to the effect, I can't remember what their slogan was, but it was basically accepting the premise that there was something broken with Social Security. And the fact is that Social Security and Medicare doesn't, you don't need to say, I need to protect it. Like there's no, like they wanted to keep it here. Keep it up. I mean, it's a lie. Paul Ryan, here's the quote. Paul Ryan was correct when he did the tax code. What's the first thing he decided we had to go after, Biden said, with a slight smirk. And then Biden leaned into the microphone and said, in deep menacing, Social Security, Medicare. If you listen to the audio, Biden appears to be mocking Ryan. Who wrote this? Oh, his own campaign. It appears. We need to do something about Social Security and Medicare. And he said, he sarcastically whispered, that's the only way you can find room to pay for it. What? There's something missing from that whole exchange. Forget it. I mean, the bottom line is, look, you've seen the videos we've played. Literally almost dozens. Dozens of people. I mean, dozens of footage of him bragging to Tim Russert. Him sitting on the Senate floor. I'm the guy who says freeze all this stuff. When you freeze a program that is designed to match the inflation rate, what you're doing is you're cutting the spending power and the buying power of those people. That's a cut to Social Security. That's what a cut is. All right. Let me first get to this to you, and then we'll get to Chris Hayes. Hey, one of today's sponsors is News Voice, which is the first ever entirely open, crowdsourced, and democratized platform for news. You can download the app for free at newsvoice.com. Listen, we know that the vast majority of news in this country is owned by the same five huge corporations. It's important for you to be a critical reader of the news. You need to know who owns it, where it's coming from, what their perspectives are, and the best way to do that is to look at multiple sources at the same time about the same story. That is how you become a critical news reader. And that's exactly what News Voice helps you keep track of. It's a free crowdsourced website and mobile app that lets you create personalized news feeds, maintain a clear picture of where your news is coming from and what political slants may exist. It helps you aggregate from news from corporate outlets, international outlets, local news, independent media, giving access to every side of the story. News Voice is fueled by its community of users who contribute to the platform by fact-checking, submitting stories and sources that are missing, upvoting stories, and writing story summaries. You can also comment on stories and debate politics with other members of the community. And through staying active in the community, you can level up and earn perks on the platform. News Voice Plays feature allows you to listen to your personal news feed every day through customizable audio news playlist. It's your own personally tailored radio station for news. News Voice is a next generation news aggregator and social media platform that values transparency, good journalism, and productive political discussions. You can get totally free access by going to newsvoice.com/majority. We have a link underneath this. If you're watching on video, we got it on YouTube, rather. You're watching on video on YouTube. Jeez. Or if you're listening, we have it in the podcast description. And I should also tell you, Majority Report's possible thanks to sponsors like Skillshare. And actually, I owe Skillshare a lot more than that, too. Picking up a bunch of new skills, little marketing tricks and techniques, seeing it every day. And anybody who goes to skl.sh/majorityreport5 is going to get 2 entire months of totally free access to Skillshare's entire library of thousands of online classes. It's an online learning community for everybody from creatives to freelance business owners to people who just want to get better at their hobby or learn a brand new hobby. Skillshare's classes range from illustration, painting, graphic design, photography. I have upped significantly my iPhone photography. It's all about composition and et cetera, just being aware of what you're doing in many respects. Video editing, web design, bookkeeping, marketing, productivity, everything in between. Skillshare's video lessons let you learn at your own pace and you can fit into any schedule. They have classes for all skill levels, whether you're already a master of what you do or you're just getting started. I can tell you right now, my plan for the weekend, I don't have the kids. I'm coming into the office. I'm doing some work around here. We got a little mini dishwasher. I'm going to hook that thing up and I'm going to play. I've got actually 4 different ones lined up right now, but I'm not sure which ones I'll do, but I'm going to do content calendars made easy, save time and develop a personal brand. Now, I don't know what that's about, but if it means like a way that we can schedule our content better for us. And then I think I'm going to take the productivity masterclass where I create a custom system that works. Boom. Take that, ladies and gentlemen. And there are chapters. So if I have to stop for a minute or I need to go back, it's super easy. And you don't have to pay per class. A membership to Skillshare gives you access to each and every class they offer, so you never run out of ways to fuel your curiosity. Like I say, most of the classes are around 60 minutes, maybe a little bit less, a little bit more, and they're in chapters, super easy. Make 2020 a year where you explore new skills, deepen existing passions, and get lost in creativity. Skillshare makes it easier than ever, folks. Best part is, membership is less than 10 bucks a month. But because you listen to the Majority Report, you can have 2 entire months of free membership to Skillshare with full access to all their classes when you go to skl.sh/majorityreport5. That's the number 5. Put the link in the podcast notes under this video if you're watching on YouTube, as always. Folks, just a reminder too, this program relies on your support. When you become a member of the Majority Report at jointhemajorityreport.com, you not only get the you're supporting the free show, you get extra content every day, and we also have bonuses, and we got a lot of bonus stuff coming up. We're doing a lot of live coverage in the next, well, next week we're doing a ton of live coverage, and then in the weeks to follow, there's going to be a lot of live coverage of, like, I don't know, debates, elections, State of the Union addresses. And we generally keep those for members, too. You can see it live or you can listen later as a member. So join themajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget the AM Quickie. People, that thing is exploding now. People are loving it. It's getting out the door, 8 a.m., 5 or 6 minutes. Get all the headlines. You get to hear. This is how my voice usually sounds in the morning. So today it was even worse, though. All right, quick break. When we come back, Chris Hayes. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program. He is the host of All In with Chris Hayes, author of Nation, Colony Within a Nation, and The Twilight of the Elite. Two books that you should absolutely read. And Chris Hayes. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Sam, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay. As you can hear, my voice is a little bit tried.
This voice a little shot, huh?
Yeah, it is a little bit. I just want to say, you don't get enough credit for this, but Twilight of the Elite saw what was coming down the pike quite a ways. People should go back and read that book.
It's funny. I go back to that book. There are some things I definitely got wrong in that book, but the stuff that I got right, I got really right. Like there's a chapter in there basically about like knowledge and disinformation, and it's about it's about WikiLeaks and Julian Assange and how we form our knowledge. And I spent a lot of time actually in that chapter on the ClimateGate fiasco,
yes,
which was these hacked emails of a obscure climate research center in the UK that then became like this like completely manufactured scandal that they were like cooking the books. It resulted in a whole bunch of investigations. The Murdoch machine on both sides of the Atlantic like went into, and it's completely a playbook for the kinds of disinformation campaigns we've seen since then.
Yeah. And that was WikiLeaks too, wasn't it?
What's that?
That was WikiLeaks as well.
It was weird. It was, we never actually found out who the hackers are, although the,
right,
the sort of circumstantial evidence points to Russia, but they posted, whoever hacked it posted their own thing a la Guccifer. So it was a very similar situation because, you know, the Russia hacks first appear through a Guccifer site that's kind of clunky and bad, and then WikiLeaks ends up posting it as well. And, you know, they're much more easily accessible.
Right. Interesting. That a lot of that has been lost recent history, I guess. But
yeah,
that was
exactly.
People forget that dominated the news for like 3 years.
It really
did. It was nuts.
And it also put a bunch of climate scientists through the ringer. You know,
yep,
like,
Michael Mann.
There's
I think
cost to that stuff. When you get a target pin on your back.
All right. Well, so today we don't know for sure, but it certainly appears based upon what Lamar Alexander said last night statement he released that we're not going to hear witnesses. I want to get into the politics about it in a first, but let's first hear this quote from Alan Dershowitz, because this is the one that, you know, I think this is just sort of stunning. And, you know, Tim Worcester. Is it, was it? No, super. It's not Super Worcester. It's the
Tim Wu.
Right. I know. He said that he took Dershowitz's class at Harvard, and he said that there is no something to the effect of like there is, you know, the most ethical thing to do as a defense attorney is to throw out, to not recognize any ethics in the pursuit of the defense,
right,
of
just,
your,
yeah, just do whatever right up to the line.
And I think that's what this is an example of, except for, yep, he's playing with the entire future of the country in some ways, yep, with this. Here's Alan Dershowitz.
Yesterday, I had the privilege of attending the rolling out of a peace plan by the President of the United States regarding the Israel-Palestine conflict. And I offered you a hypothetical the other day. What if a Democratic president were to be elected and Congress were to authorize much money to either Israel or the Palestinians, and the Democratic president were to say to Israel, no, I'm going to withhold this money unless you stop all settlement growth, or to the Palestinians, I will withhold the money Congress authorized to you unless you stop paying terrorists. And the president said, quid pro quo. If you don't do it, you don't get the money. If you do it, you get the money. There's no one in this chamber that would regard that as in any way unlawful. The only thing that would make a quid pro quo unlawful is if the quo were in some way illegal.
Now, pause it for one second. All right. Now, let's just stop it here, because A, in this scenario, right, the president wouldn't be doing it in secret, right? And B, it's not a question of the quo being illegal. The act of doing a quid pro quo and withholding money itself is unlawful. We know that at this point. And
that's the thing that I was screaming at the television while I was watching it, is that, and I've been saying this all along, take away, there are sort of three components. There's the trying to get them to interfere the elections, even if there wasn't a quid pro quo, itself is, I think, impeachable. Then there's upholding the money, which itself is unlawful. And then there's exchanging the two for each other. So, yes, can you imagine, actually, like, think about this for a second. It would be, I don't know if it would be result in impeachment, but if aid was passed by both houses and signed by the president, and then a Democratic president unilaterally upheld aid to Israel, you think that wouldn't be a big deal?
And
what are you talking about?
We're not even acknowledging the fact that Trump did this in secret. We have every right. single agency that's involved in this process signing off and wondering what the hell's going on. If Barack Obama had held back aid in secret for Israel, or for, you know, like that, they wouldn't get this far. They would somehow figure out a way of impeaching him before it even got to the Senate. I mean, they would convict him. It would have been nuts. But let's continue here, because this is the sleight of hand. He's saying when the quo is illegal, but go ahead.
Were in some way illegal. Now, we talked about motive. There are three possible motives that a political figure can have. One, a motive in the public interest, and the Israel argument would be in the public interest.
Pause it for one second. Now, this is also a sleight of hand here, too, with the idea of in the public interest. This is, they're not giving, this is policy. This is stated statutory policy, right? Like laws were passed. That's how the money gets there. This is not just a vague notion of what is in the public interest. This is something very specific.
Also, he could have, I mean, this is the thing I always say, he could have vetoed the bill. He signed the bill. Like, that's the thing that drives you so crazy, when they say, well, the president has discretion, the president policy this and policy that. Like, he signed the bill. Right? Like, you know, yes, the way the president can say is like, I am vetoing he's done this on Saudi Arabia three times. He's vetoed things passed by both houses of Congress to protect Mohammed bin Salman's like campaign to basically grind Yemenis into dust and kill hundreds of thousands of them. He can do that. He can veto, you know, he can veto bills. But the point of this is that he freaking signed the bill. So it was the law.
Continue.
The second is in his own political interest. And the third, which hasn't been mentioned, would be in his own financial interest, his own pure financial interest, just putting money in the bank. I want to focus on the second one for just one moment. Every public official that I know believes that his election is in the public interest. And mostly you're right. Your election is in the public interest.
Pause it. Now, wait a second. So now it has gone from policy, that law that is passed, signed by the president, as you say, has turned into public interest. And then he defines public interest as just sort of like something that happens relative to the public. Like not even to the public's benefit, but rather just like they're interested in it. Like, go back here. He's slid. It's amazing how much he's slid these definitions over the course of just seconds.
Yes.
Putting money in the bank. I want to focus on the second one for just one moment. Every public official that I know believes that his election is in the public interest. And mostly you're right. Your election is in the public interest. And if a president does something which he believes will help him get elected in the public interest, that cannot be the kind of quid pro quo that results in impeachment.
He's done so many sleight of hands that by the end of it, it's he's gotten to a place that's manifestly absurd, right? Because what he has done is, through this sort of slippery transmutation of his definitions, he has ended up in a place where definitionally a politician views their reelection the national interest, and the ergo definitionally pursuing said reelection can never be a corrupt intent. I mean, obviously that's ridiculous.
Well, obviously. But it also means that the only way a president can do something that is worthy of impeachment is presumably if he is in his second term, right, when he can't get reelected. Like, there's a story today about Senate investigators interviewing an IRS whistleblower because allegedly a Treasury official came in and interfered with the audit of Trump and Pence. But how could one not argue that Trump interfering with that wouldn't be in the public interest?
Right, exactly.
I mean,
exactly. And I mean, people have also used the Watergate example, right? Like, look, if you think that, you know, it is in the national interest for McGovern to lose, right? I mean, and clearly Nixon did. I mean, Nixon thought it would be bad for the country if McGovern won. And then you have a bunch of burglars go bug the offices of the DNC. Like, you're doing that for, I guess, the national interest under Dershowitz's conception.
I think basically everything is okay in that instance. But also, if you're just talking about the public interest, not only do politicians think that it's in the public interest that they get reelected, but it's also, I would imagine, most politicians think it's in the public interest that the public loves them and doesn't think that they've done anything wrong.
Right.
So, like, every cover up would also be perfectly legal, because it would hurt the nation if people knew. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, under these terms, why wouldn't you exonerate Bill Clinton? Because, of course, it was in the public's interest that they didn't know the
learned
details.
For them not to know about what happened, because that would, you know, that would damage the Democratic Party, that he thinks it's in the national interest to keep its hand on government.
Well, just everything that we were told about, you know, what are we going to tell the kids? We heard over and over again, and we would, I mean, that was the big rallying cry of the Republicans at the time. So that is, and the thing that's really horrific about that is, not only does this, like, this is going to set a precedent, right? I mean, this goes down in history as the reason, because Lamar Alexander basically said that there's no need for more evidence to prove something that has already been proven, but that does not meet the United States Constitution for a high bar for an impeachable offense. He's
right.
Using this argument by Dershowitz.
Yes. I mean, I think he's using a version of it. I'm not sure. Like, I think that it's funny. I had a different reaction to the Alexander statement than a lot of people, which is that I guess I never expected him to break, but I actually weirdly found it satisfying that he at least stipulates, like, I found the gaslighting infuriating and insane, that hours of people going up there trying to tell us that, like, Trump cares about corruption or that this wasn't done for his reelection, when, like, it's just so, I mean, obviously it is. Like, stop talking to us like we're idiots. Stop trying to say that, like, day is night and night is day. At least Alexander basically stipulates that, right? At least Alexander says, yeah, they proved their case. And it's like, I felt some weird relief that, like, thank you for not, like, it's the crazy pills feeling that you have watching these people lying and utter bad faith about, well, the president's really concerned about corruption, and, well, he wanted a burden sharing. I mean, give me a fucking break. Like, so at least Alexander, the more, in some ways, it's, like, more defensible to me in a weird way to be like, this was wrong and inappropriate, but not worthy of removal, and he did the thing that he's accused of.
Here is the part where I think Alexander does his sleight of hand. This is paragraph three. It was, quote, this is a quote. It was inappropriate for the president to ask a foreign leader to investigate his political opponent and to withhold United States aid to encourage that investigation. Like you say, he is admitting the facts there. And then he goes on to say, when elected officials inappropriately interfere with such investigations, it undermines the principle of equal justice under the law. And then he goes on to say, but the Constitution does not give the Senate power to remove the president from office and ban him from this year's ballot simply for actions that are inappropriate. The issue is not that he interfered with an investigation. There was no investigation.
Right.
And in fact, well, the evidence suggests that he didn't even want an investigation. He just wanted an announcement about the investigation.
He wanted an interview on Fareed Zakaria.
Well, this is where Lamar Alexander lies and does his own.
Oh, no. I totally agree with that. I'm not kicking Alexander off the hook.
Right.
I'm just like, the one silver lining was at least you're not like, you know, pissing on me and telling me it's raining. Like,
well, but wait a second. No, he's saying I'm pissing on you, but it's also raining.
No, that's true.
But it's also raining.
Right, that's
what he's saying here.
That's right. That's what he's saying. I'm pissing on you and it's also raining.
Right. You can't feel the pee because it's raining too. And
right. That's right. You can't tell where the wetness is coming from.
He's just changing the gaslight here because he's just saying, here are the facts. He's saying it is 2 + 2 and that definitely equals 5. And, right. And that's where he's getting off. This is not about interfering with investigation. This is about interfering with an election.
That's right. And that becomes the issue. I mean, it's been the issue from the beginning. The broader context of this, as someone who covered this day in, day out throughout all of 2019 and often talked with you about it, like, the Democrats did not want to impeach Donald Trump. They didn't want to do it. Nancy Pelosi didn't want to do it. Hakeem Jeffries didn't want to do it. I think Nadler probably did and was sort of being, you know, they were putting reins, but she certainly didn't. The thing that made them break the glass and pull the emergency brake was, holy shit, he's going to rig the next election. And so, like, that's the thing at the center of this entire thing, and the reason that, like, an election isn't a remedy is that the fear is that it won't be a free and fair election.
That's right.
Like, that's the problem. The mechanism at the center, the reason that this rose to the level of impeachable from Democrats, who did not want to do this, was a realization of, like, holy shit, he is going to use the presidency to rig the next election. And so being like, look, we got an election in 8 months or whatever it is. It's like, yeah, we got an election in 8 months that, I don't know, like, Mohammed bin Salman is going to be, like, you know, sending his, like, hackers to, like, bring down the Democratic nominee. Like, awesome.
Well, and this is the thing, is that, I first of all, I mean, if it was up to Giuliani, I mean, I think at this point, like, Giuliani has exposed himself as a raving lunatic. And to a certain extent, I think, like, the Democrats have, to some extent, inoculated themselves. Or inoculated if Joe Biden, and I think everybody's clear that I don't want Joe Biden to be the nominee, but if Joe Biden's the nominee, there is at least some inoculation to, they're going to continue to pursue this. I mean, they're going to just figure out another way of claiming that there's new evidence, you know, about Joe Biden. But they've really done their work in terms of laying down the narrative. The other thing that occurs to me, and you and I have talked about this a little bit, from a political standpoint, let's just turn to that, because assuming that Mitch McConnell is able to wrangle the votes to end this today, Donald Trump will be able to do his Super Bowl interview and do the State of the Union address and tout how he was completely exonerated by the Senate And Dershowitz did a great job, and he's going to pre-pardon him for all his massages or whatever it is. What do you think the political implications are of this going forward?
So I think the sort of annoyingly boring answer is that I think it's probably mostly a stalemate, which is to say, like, it's not really determinative in either direction. That said, I think the witness vote is harder than the acquittal vote. And I think that, like, I was talking to someone the other day about, you know, Schumer, like, we were talking about Schumer holding the caucus, right, together. And Schumer's definitely going to hold everyone on the witness vote. There's no question with Jones, Sinema, Manchin, right, who are probably the three most likely to bolt. Doug Jones in Alabama, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, and Kirsten Sinema in Arizona. That's an easy vote for them. The witness vote is an easy vote. Like, yeah, we should hear more people.
Right.
And the converse is that it's not a great vote for Cory Gardner. And I think that there's a reason that Susan Collins, who's got enough sort of independence from Trump in terms of her political base, is probably going to vote for witnesses and then go back to Maine and be like, look at me, I'm independent. So I think the witness vote is a bad vote for them. And I think that the acquittal vote after that doesn't help. And particularly we don't want witnesses, we're acquitting him, and then Bolton 3-4 weeks later is on television being like, yes, he did exactly what he's accused of. Like, I think that's a pretty bad political situation for Trump. I also think there's like a motivating factor here. I do think there's something about just watching people and talking to people. I was talking to people on the subway on my ride in. That's happened sometimes. Like, the sort of feeling of impotent rage coming right as the campaign season starts, I don't think it's like the worst thing for like people to be reminded of the stakes here.
Right.
You know, like in the broad anti-Trump coalition, which is a very broad coalition and very unwieldy because it includes people from, Bill Kristol to, Marxist-Leninists. I think that like the reminder of the sort of fundamental stakes here going literally right into election season is also not the worst thing. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, this entire thing, the thing that it reminds me most of is Kavanaugh, right? Where it's like at a certain level, the conclusions seem foreordained, and then there's these developments that make it seem like, oh, maybe there's some little crack, and then the foreordained conclusion ends up happening, right? And I don't like Kavanaugh, though. The difference in Kavanaugh is Kavanaugh really rallied a certain segment of people on the right who aren't crazy about Trump, but who really were like ride or die for Kavanaugh. And I don't think impeachment has done the same. I think impeachment has really activated the Trump people, but I don't think it's had that broader rallying effect. And it's also like 8 months before the election. So I feel like there's in the balance of motivation, particularly once impeachment ends, I think a sort of mantle of like righteous rage passes to people who feel wronged by the decision that is not like the worst thing in the universe. Again, I'm looking for silver linings here because I think it's genuinely like dangerous and perilous where we are. I want to be very clear on that. But purely on the politics, I don't think that like it's terrible politics. Terribly politically for the sort of anti-Trump coalition.
No, I think, and I would add to that, just broadly speaking, had the Democrats not impeached, I'm convinced it would have demoralized a huge segment a significant segment of Democratic voters.
Yes, agreed.
Because, I mean, we're going to go into this, like, in terms of like Trump, we're going into this election where he's going to try and suppress votes. And if you start with the narrative of Democrats are just not going to fight in any way, I think then it gives him a leg up.
And I felt the same way about Kavanaugh. Like I felt the way about Kavanaugh, which is that like you got to fight. You got like you don't have the numbers, you don't have the votes, but you fight and you fight and you fight and you fight. What you think is right, and you make the case, and you push as far as you can. And then if you lose, you lose. But you got to lose fighting. And like that, you know, if you don't fight, if you just roll over, that says to people that are trying to vote, like, people understand the math of the votes, right? Like, people get that. Like, we've never removed a president through an impeachment vote. In fact, as I pointed out earlier today, no U.S. senator has ever voted to remove a president of their own party in American history, right? So, like, the math here was always clear. But that doesn't mean you don't fight. You got to fight.
It used to be during like the Bush years, that was the rallying cry of the activist base, was there are fights that are worth losing. Like, yeah. that it's okay to lose these fights because not only what you get out of it, but just the exercise itself. I contend that, and let's play this Martha McSally ad, because this is when they don't vote for the witnesses. This is one of those few times in my mind where a process is going to make a difference, because there are a bunch of like purple state, if you will, Republican senators who are on the cusp. And this is going to cut in to those folks who want to see some independence from Trump and want to see just like the process is done properly. Those people generally I cannot stand, but in this instance, it might be valuable. Here is one of those ads from the Never Trumper organization who, people will have to sort of suck up the praise for John McCain and Barry Goldwater in this. Yeah. But again,
well, they know who their audience is. It's not the dumbest, it's relatively smart for the audience it's targeted at.
From my perspective, this is the only constituency that these people, these Never Trumpers, ever had in the first place, is Republicans, yep. Not Democrats. Yep. But here.
Yes, correct.
Martha McSally, Arizona rejected you in 2018. And you know why. You were too close to Donald Trump and you lost badly. Now you've gone full Trump. Again.
Man, you're a liberal hack. I'm not talking to you.
You knew Arizona wanted the truth. We demanded witnesses and evidence in the trial of Donald Trump. Oh, there's a reason your poll numbers are dropping fast. And you're on your way to defeat. Oh, that's right, Martha. Again. Arizona has always produced mavericks, true independents. People like John McCain and Barry Goldwater, senators that served Arizona, people of courage, toughness. They stood for what was right, no matter the political risk. And they are remembered as American heroes. And you, Martha, you'll be remembered as just another Trump hack. If you're remembered at all.
That ad, I mean,
I like the ad. I just wish that the voiceover had a little more contempt in it. Yeah. You know, if I was giving the notes in that read, I would have been like, just ramp it up. You're only at a 7 now. I need it at a 15.
It's like Elizabeth Taylor and a cat on a hot tin roof. I mean, it's really sort of like just it's literally like you imagine like some suburban Republican voter who's sitting there like three drinks into martinis, and just Martha McSally walks in and is like, oh, look who showed up. But they did another ad like this for Cory Gardner, which had the same sort of like, which was the same mirror thing. Like, you're a wimp. You know, you're Donald Trump's like, bitch or something. Like, I don't even know if it said that, but it certainly felt like that's what it said. And I think that's going to resonate with this very, very narrow band of would be Republican voters.
Yeah, I think yes, I do think that's right. I mean, I think, I tend to think process is not, process is not what is going to kill you. And I also think that I think they're stuck in a tough place, McSally and Gardner particularly, politically, not like, in any larger sense. But, they can't. I think voting for witnesses is like voting to like get more information that will make voting for acquittal harder, right? So, which like I think they have to vote for acquittal, and I think they're probably right, because you got to take your shot if you're McSally and Gardner going with the MAGA base, because distancing yourself from it leaves you stuck between first and second base, right?
Right.
Like, you got to either like be like this independent maverick or full Trump, and they don't really have the guts or the base or the ability to go full maverick. So I don't think they're necessarily making the wrong call in politically, again, narrowly politically in voting against witnesses. However, there is a cost to pay for that, and Democrats should deliver that cost, right? Like, and I thought that, you know, the Goldwater-McCain stuff's fascinating, right? Because Goldwater is famously the person that leads the delegation of Republican senators to the White House to inform Richard Nixon that he's going to lose a removal vote in the Senate for the first time in American history, which prompts his resignation. And it was a big deal. Obviously, Goldwater is a pillar of the Republican Party and a stalwart conservative. And John McCain, you know, very famously, like, at 2 in the morning, gives the thumbs down to the ACA repeal vote, you know, killing the top domestic legislative priority for Trump. And, you know, those two moments did involve some independence and courage, whatever you think about the two men otherwise.
Right.
It genuinely did. And it genuinely is a thing that a certain kind of voter in an identity sense wants to associate with himself, right? Like fair-minded, like not like a hack and not like partisan and in the center, but like mavericky. Like that has an appeal to a certain kind of voter, particularly in that state, that particularly Martha McSally has to win. And so I think this absolutely hurts her.
I've met a lot of people like that over the years. They're usually men. They're usually sort of like libertarian leaning. They listen
exactly,
to NPR
yeah.
to say that they listen to both sides. And they, I think it is a question of like how they want to perceive themselves. And I think that is
exactly.
And I think that is that. And I literally think there's, you know, not a ton of these people, but if the Democrats, I'm convinced if the Democrats take the Senate, it is going to be because of these votes is going to be like one of the sort of last straw on the camel's back for these senators.
And we should be, you know, one thing I think is really important when you think about the politics of this year and this moment is that there's lots of different sub constituencies that Democrats need to do better with at the margins, right? In different places geographically. Like I saw this fascinating map yesterday that was where people who made between, I think, I want to say it was like $20,000 and $40,000 or $40,000 and $60,000. It was a map of the states, right? And of 2016 of whether Trump or Clinton won. And there's this huge range depending on the state, right? Because there's these different, like, it's not one electorate. It's just a million different electorates. So like what message works against Cory Gardner in Colorado Springs or what works against Martha McSally in the Tucson suburbs is different than what might work in Kenosha, Wisconsin, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think is almost certainly and different than what works in Detroit. Or in Philadelphia, like all you need to do better among all these different segments, both in turnout and in persuasion. And they're different groups with different things they care about. So like the key for Democrats, and particularly when you think about both the sort of national electoral college map and the state by state map and then the frontline House districts, is that there's just lots of different constituencies. I think there's some, you know, swing voters or voters that you need to win in Wisconsin who could give a shit about impeachment.
Oh,
right?
No. Like, I totally agree. That's why this
there
is.
But then there's some voters in the Tucson suburbs, right, who live in Scottsdale that are exactly the kind you described. So like you just, you know, this is not rocket science, but like reaching these different constituencies, particularly when you're talking about a coalition that is so much more diverse on one side than the other side, right? that's the difficult task the Democrats have before them.
I agree, but I think, you know, the thing is that there is nobody running for Senate who's got to reach those people in Wisconsin and in Kenosha.
Correct.
And
exactly.
Tucson.
Yeah. That's
and
why
that's why I think
yep.
this impeachment story has always been about the Senate races. I don't think the implications. I mean, I think that the absence of impeachment would have caused a lot of problems because all this crap about Biden, this would have gone on, and that, you know, by if they decide by April or May that that it's going to be Bernie or Warren or Buttigieg, all of a sudden we're going to hear about the Ukrainians getting involved in that too. I mean, there's no reason to believe that we're just going to do this horribly corrupt thing to ensure our sense against Biden. But if it's any other Democrat, we're going to definitely play by the rules. Like that, that calculus, I don't think was happening anywhere.
So
I think there was a cost to pay to not impeach, as well as with Democratic enthusiasm. But to the extent that there's any gains, I think it's going to be exclusively in terms of the Senate. arguably yep. maybe the House in certain areas, but more the Senate, because I think this stuff is basically shook out in the House. I don't think there's really any room to pick anything up in too many spaces.
I totally agree. I think that's exactly right. When you look at the map, there are a few places where there's probably four or five like real good frontline targets, but then there's a bunch they got to defend too. I mean, you know, some of those districts, Kendra Horn's district in Oklahoma, like, you know, that's like a plus 11 Trump district.
Yep.
Plus 15, like that's a, you know, that's a tough defend. Like they won some seats that were really at the sort of reaches in 2018. So yeah, I think the House is, I don't see the House moving a ton in either direction. The Senate obviously is a big, and that's also where these key votes go. And I don't think, again, in the sort of sum total all of this, like making them take all those tough votes, Joni Ernst, Susan Collins, Cory Gardner, Martha McSally, Tom Tillis, all five of those people are up.
Loeffler too is it Loeffler in Georgia? The newly appointed senator. I mean, she had to tack far to the right because of Collins jumping into the race, and she was appointed specifically because she wasn't Collins, and she's going to have to turn into him to get through this jungle primary, I think.
Yep. Yep. And oh, by the way, I am so fascinated with that race because we know that Trump wanted Collins.
Yep.
Collins has been his, you know, he's one of the basement boys. That's like the Doug Collins, Matt Gaetz, Jim Jordan, who like are always like doing the press huddles in the basement outside the House Intel room.
Yeah.
And he's a basement boy, and Trump loves him some basement boys. And so he wanted Collins. He was sort of prevailed upon by Mitch McConnell and others to not back Collins. And then Collins was like, screw it. So he's going to primary him, and they're going to desperately try to keep Trump out of it. But it's going to be Roy Moore, Luther Strange all over again, which is the president endorsed Luther Strange in that Alabama primary, but the MAGA heads knew who the MAGA candidate
right.
was.
Yep.
Like, they understood that Roy Moore was the MAGA guy. Like, they're not idiots. Trump could go there and, you know, record his sort of hostage video endorsements for Luther Strange, but no one was fooled there, and it's going to be the same thing in Georgia. He could go and say Kelly Loeffler is you know, strong on Second Amendment, loves our vets, tough on crime, whatever his, like, hilarious control-paste endorsement is for everyone. And, like, every Georgia Republican knows that Doug Collins is, like, the real MAGA candidate.
Yep. All right, I got two more quick questions. I know you got to jump, but one, do you think the Democrats continue on with investigations after impeachment?
I think they have to. I mean, I really do. I think there's litigation they have to do. There's going to be, I mean, we haven't even discussed the fact that, like, the tax return Cy Vance case is going to be decided by the Supreme Court in the election year.
Right.
Like, that is a big moment in either direction, right? If the court orders him to release it, that's huge. And, you know, you can't appeal a Supreme Court decision. I mean, there's some way I can imagine John Roberts craftily trying to, like, come up with something that allows it to be kicked, the can to be kicked past November. Like, well, we re-ran this back to the district court for just consideration in X, Y, and Z. Or maybe he ignores the Supreme Court. Or the 5-4 Republican appointees vote to cover up the president's tax returns, which itself I think is, like, energizing,
yep.
if outrageous. So there are a whole bunch, like, there's that fight coming up. There's the McGahn litigation. There is the Bolton book is going to come out. That's the other thing. Like, how could you not investigate? How can you not subpoena Bolton in the House?
Right.
After all this, how can you not subpoena Bolton in the House? The guy has, Trump is essentially waived executive privilege by talking about the conversation. The guy has said he will respond to a subpoena from the Senate. You don't get to decide which house you go to.
That's
like,
right.
Like,
you can,
I mean,
choose.
He can try, he can fight
right.
it, but like, of course you got to keep investigating.
All right. And then lastly, you know, there was Tim Alberta, who is, is he right for Politico? Is it? He had a tweet about a thought on Lamar Alexander, and this was last night before the Alexander's announcement. And he basically said that he spent a lot of time with retired and retiring congressional Republicans since 2016. Most feel a zero sense of liberation to bash Trump on the way out.
Yep.
If anything, they're more cowed and cautious, fearing that yep. being out of favor with president and his party limits their earning power. That's, I think, and he says it's not just about money. It's about, like, like all his friends, and they worry about harassment of their families and loss of their standing in their community and a strange relationship.
Harassment of their family. Like, honestly, like, people are going to spit in you at the golf club.
And
like,
I think that's why, like, Cory Gardner and in particular, I think for him, it wasn't just a question of like, I think he could have made a calculation. I can win without them on some level, but I think he just realized like the cost of losing that way
is
far greater than the cost of losing going down in flames with Trump. And I think,
downtown on K Street and he'll make, you know, make $1 million a year.
Yep. I think.
And he's young, right? So like he's thinking about, he's thinking in the future. Now, but I even thought that the thing about harassment of their family, like, I think the material, like, the money matters a lot. But I think we tend to underestimate, like, how much that personal stuff matters. Like, I remember having dinner with a bunch of congressional Democrats in 2010 during the Tea Party town halls. And they were just freaked out. They were shook. Like, almost, like, physically shook that there were people screaming at them in their faces, and it was in their heads. Like, it really, it's not people like that gets in people's heads, that those interpersonal aspects of the job and of pressure and of social sanction matter a lot to the human beings that end up being elected representatives.
Yeah. I think like it's sometimes hard, I think, for normal people to sort of like realize that dynamic. And I don't mean it because like we're, you know, I think there's like a sensitivity that exists there, or that they're living in such a bubble that the idea of criticism that comes directly to their face is so inconsistent with their life experience at this point, that it's hard to, you know, like Tom Steyer, like how many times do you think Tom Steyer in the past 10 years that people have come up to him and said like, you're a jerk and you're wrong.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, nobody ever says that to a billionaire.
No,
because
no,
you're just like, I have an outside chance of like him dropping $500,000 on me just for the heck of it. And
yeah, exactly.
Michael
Bloomberg basically ran New York for 12 years by buying off anyone that would say anything mean about him.
Yep. And I remember that moment where those wealthy people during the Zuccotti Park takeover called what's his face, the business writer on CNBC, Sorkin, and said, "Would you go down there and check it out and see if I'm in danger, like personal danger?" And he went down there to see and had to tell them all, assure them all that you're going to be safe. Nobody's coming for you. No one's coming with pitchforks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's. Chris Hayes, thanks so much for taking the time, man. I know that things are a little bit hectic over there.
Yeah, great. Great to talk, man.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye. Chris Hayes, ladies and gentlemen. We don't have time to mess around today at all. Look at that. There was no sentimentality. It was just bye. See you later. Yeah, all business. Speaking of which, we got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to David Roth. We got to do this quick, man. All right. Quick break. Be right back.
Season was almost done. We'd managed it 12.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program. I'm not sure what his position is, writer at the unnamed temporary sports blog.com. David Roth, welcome back to the program.
When you hear it out loud, you can tell that the name is perfect. You know, there was some debate internally as to whether it was the right thing, but it's so concise. It sings.
It really is. It's impressive. I think people are going to have, like, you know, it's the double ends, I think, that are going to really tie people up.
Yeah, that's just basic best practices for SEO stuff. The more chances you give people to misspell something, the better you're doing.
If there's any entrepreneurs out there who want to get named temporary temporary sports blog, I think you might do pretty well if you put some advertising up there.
Yeah, or if you have a Unimed, just something as simple as that. Just give yourself a chance, you know, get those clicks.
Exactly. So wait, what is this? What's going on this weekend? Is there something else? Is some other big sports event happening?
Yeah, there's it's a pretty full slate NHL wise this weekend, and we have sorry. It's a great sport. NHL's terrific. We all love it. This is an opportunity to do like our dumb blogs for 3 days that a benevolent sponsor gave us. So yeah, some of what we do is going to be related to the big football game.
All right, wait, back up, because I don't think everybody fully understands. You were at a very prominent sports website, correct?
Yeah, yes. So I was at Deadspin, and I left along with everybody else from Deadspin under unpleasant circumstances to do with management. And we've all been freelancing, and some people have taken new jobs. But the experience of having been at Deadspin, in my case, for only like 2 years, but I mean, there were people that had been there for, you know, 10. Our brains are warped sufficiently that we were still in a Slack channel with each other talking about all those stupid blogs that we wanted to do like the entire time. And it wasn't, you know, for as much of the issue that we had with management had to do with them, you know, being mad that we would sometimes write about things other than sports. But most of what we missed were dumb sports related things. Mike Francesa, like legendary New York sports radio blowhard, like straight up farted on the air like 3 days after we all left. And I couldn't blog about that. That's not a story you can like pitch to Slate,
right?
You know, so it's the sort of thing where I had no outlet for this story that was, you know, I've waited my whole life for a story like that. And, you know, so this is finally our chance to get to tell those important stories to people for 48 more hours.
And Deadspin in a day, just everybody walked away from it, and it's just sort of like floating in suspended animation in a way.
Yeah, it's kind of spooky. It's like there was a period of time, I guess, in the late 90s where they were making a lot of movies with like sort of haunted cruise ships on them. Like one had Gabriel Byrne and one had Treat Williams. And it's kind of it's a ghost ship. I don't know how haunted it actually is, you know, but it's just a couple of weird newsy blogs that they did after everybody left, and then they just kind of bailed. So they haven't had a new post since like early November.
Yeah, it's
like
weird.
The Chiefs have lost a game more recently than Deadspin has had a post up.
Right. There you go. And
the Chiefs lost their last game on November 10th or something like that.
Wow. All right. Yeah. So the Chiefs are playing the Niners, and I don't follow football anymore since the Patriots fell apart. And then I should say I did. I was in Vegas in January of last year, of January of last year. And I made a bet on the Pats for $200, and then my friend John Benjamin insisted I bet on the Ravens, which I did not want to do. He wanted it, but it was 18-1, and so I did like $50. And then I said, like, I got to match it, because if he wins that, I'm going to be really pissed. And
that must have looked really good for most of the year.
That
the Ravens
looked
the best
really
team in
good
football
until
for
like I don't know, halfway through that game, and all of a sudden, just that was the last time I thought about football, frankly.
Yeah. No, this is one of the few things. Obviously, it sucks to not have a job. I have so loved watching exactly as much football as I want to watch and no more. It's been very liberating. I kind of recommend it to everybody.
So give us a preview of this game. I mean, is that basic? That's basically what's happening at the unnamed temporary sports blog is everybody's just writing about, well, theoretically, although somebody's, I guess now I'm looking at the post. The one is literally about hockey.
We've had more hockey related blogs than we've had Super Bowl related blogs so far. You know, that's something to work on. It's an iterative process, and there's no way of knowing, you know, just what the audience wants until we give them these blogs. Maybe people got really into hockey since we last posted, so that was the thought there. I have no idea what people are sort of just doing the things that they've wanted to do. I think that, like, Lauren has been wanting to write about the NHL for a really long time. Those are extremely difficult pitches to sell. So now that we've got the space to do it, it's like some people do want to read about it. You know, like, it's just hard to do if it's not your blog. I think in terms of the game, it's weird. I mean, like, Drew wrote about it a little bit this morning. That was our first post. It was Drew McGarry did the Jamboree thing he used to do at Deadspin. And there's some good football analysis in there under the, you know, whatever, like reader letters about best practices for when your dog goes out to poop or whatever. And the game itself is really good, which is kind of or at least it seems like a very intriguing matchup of teams, which is kind of a nice break. Even if you like the Patriots, which, you know, you seem like a nice fellow and that's your business. But it is, like, these are both very interesting teams to watch, and I felt like last year it just was the absolute nadir of miserable football Super Bowl experience that I've had since going back to when, you know, like, the 49ers would beat the Broncos by 35 points every year when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one way or another, this is going to be a fun game because of the fact that, like, it's this incredibly good defense and this incredibly good offense. And even if they sort of stymie each other, I imagine that just, like, watching that much talent on the field counterpunching, if you like football, I imagine that will be fun.
All right. Well, good. I may actually watch this game, even though it is with two subpar teams.
Relative to
the Patriots dynasty.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they just don't have that culture. You know, they don't do it.
Wait a second. I wasn't going to bring this up, but I don't know if you've seen the latest reports on the so-called Deflategate. It seems like the NFL has sort of backed off this a little bit.
Oh, you're breaking up. I got to go. this line is getting, I haven't seen that. I do know that was transparently stupid. I mean, I think that's, like, one of the all-time NFL stories, just because it's like a bunch of just dumb guys talking about the ideal gas law that, like, learned about it, you know, 45 seconds earlier. Like, there's a lot of ways in which the NFL can feel like this sort of, like, satirical version of the United States at whatever moment in time it is. But definitely Roger Goodell discussing, you know, what happens to footballs in cold air when he seems like the sort of guy that would, like, not be able to read the ingredients of a box of Cheerios out loud coherently. It was gratifying, but it was also, extremely stupid, even by NFL standards.
All right. Well, I thank you for that. And I appreciate that you're a professional sports writer. I think, that must carry a lot of weight. So I hope people around this office understand what's going on. I want to hear anything more about Deflategate. Particularly when we're talking about the Hall of Fame. Do you think Brady, I mean, since I've got you on the line, do you think Brady's going to retire? Do you think he's going to go somewhere else or what?
I think that he will not retire, and I think he will stay, just because it's very difficult for me to imagine it. You know, we have this conversation, again, me and my freaking idiot coworkers who have nothing else to do, former coworkers, about where the funniest destinations for him would be if he decided to do the, like, Joe Namath with the Rams thing, you know, and play, like, sort of 2 years that feel like you dreamt them on a team that isn't going anywhere. And the funniest is if he goes and plays for the Lions, to my mind, you know, that it's like a triumphant return to Michigan. He's working with Matt Patricia, who's kind of like the latest like knob of gnarled and inedible fruit to fall off the Bill Belichick coaching tree. And if he were to go to the Lions and go like 8-8 and then 6-10 and then retire, I think that in some ways that would be a fitting end. But you know, it's also very difficult for me to imagine him leaving the Patriots. Like as much as this year was kind of like, they seemed, especially in the second half, to be like winding down and kind of on the downside of this sort of dynasty, I don't think that Brady himself is like cooked.
Right.
And I know this as somebody who watched Eli Manning for the last 4 or 5 years, where the Giants would, you know, they find one good throw in a game and be like, you see that? You can't do that if you shouldn't be an NFL quarterback anymore. Right. And then, you know, people would be like, well, he threw 31 other passes in the game. And like most of them were straight up in the air for some reason. Like, why would you do this? And with Brady, I think that like they have done a good job, you know, just because they're very well coached, like not asking him to do things that he can't do. I just think that this is like, it felt like the most Belichick-y team in the sense that he's always felt like he's kind of like pushing to see like how many kind of just random white guys from Navy he can have in the lineup at one time and still win games. And this was like, they just didn't really have very many, like they didn't have very many talented receivers. Yep. Like there's just a lack of talent's never really been a problem there, but it just didn't seem like they quite had it. But he's a, you know, he's a very good exec. Like he's a very good coach. And I don't see any reason why if they, you know, didn't retool that they could go on being annoying with Brady for another 2 or 3 years.
Yes. All right. That's exactly what I want to hear. I agree.
Or
with
inspiring.
That
yeah. I feel like annoying versus inspiring is a thin line, really.
A team like, you know, Brady could have done more with the less that he had this year, maybe 5 years ago or, you know, but I think he can't, there's not as much room for margin of error. And they were yeah, definitely lacking, particularly on the offensive side. But
it's really nice to be in that division though, because they're still going to get to play the Dolphins and the Jets twice each right. next year. Like they can make the playoffs even if Brady does decline. It's just like, they don't feel as scary or as inevitable, I guess, as they did before.
Yes. And that's a sad place to return to. I mean, I
really depends on your perspective, but yeah.
Well, I can tell you, I grew up with like, I lived through the Victor Kiam, Lisa Olsen years. I started watching when Plunkett was still the quarterback. So I felt like I earned it. That's, I don't know what to tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Honestly, to me, the thing with them was not the inevitability of any, you know, like sports powerhouse. Like eventually it gets sort of old. I think that I appreciated them when they had that kind of like, there's the year that, you know, I wanted to bring up that they lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl, but the undefeated season. Right. But that was, I couldn't really enjoy it because they were so good and so much better than every other team they played. But I think in retrospect, like those were pretty cool teams to watch. Like I've not seen teams that good in my life. It's just always been a struggle for me, you know, going back to when I watched Michael Jordan as a kid, that anybody that's too good, I
resent.
I don't know. I take it personally. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's healthy.
Is it? I don't know. It hasn't ever made me happy, but it's nice to hear that it's healthy.
No,
from,
I was being facetious.
From a Patriots fan. Oh, good. Oh, okay. All right. Cool. That makes more sense.
Yeah, that makes
it
a lot.
Scans
more sense.
A little better.
Yeah, it's not a great recipe, but I certainly understand the sentiment. All right, and so anything that we should be looking for in particular during the Super Bowl? I mean, isn't that what like you know you want to express as a you want to tell me the one dynamic that's going to make the difference for the Chiefs or the 49ers?
Oh, well, I mean, there's the things that people sort of tend to focus on and stuff like this, at least, you know, when you're watching it on TV, they're going to talk about the coaches a lot, which means that people are going to be waiting for Andy Reid to fuck up. And that's kind of unfair to Andy Reid, I think. I think he's done a really good job. I mean, I think he's a very good coach. It's just that he, like, if he calls a timeout in the third quarter, like, Twitter is going to shut down because so many people are going to be like, this shit again, like just, you know, doing the whatever, the vomiting emoji is going to like just sort of overwhelm the entire feed. I think that the Chiefs have been, I tended to underrate them this year, I think, because they had this stretch in the middle of the year after Mahomes got hurt, where they had Matt Moore as their quarterback, and they were extremely average. Matt Moore is a good NFL backup, but he's not Pat Mahomes. And I should call him Patrick Mahomes. Pat Mahomes was his dad and pitched for the Mets when I was younger. That's like the stage of being washed that I am. So I have like vivid memories of his father as a Major League Baseball player. Patrick Mahomes Jr. is a genius. And that's, I think, what the game is going to hinge on, is just the 49ers defense is everywhere. They're terrifying. They have good players at basically every position. But Mahomes is really like as creative as Brett Favre ever was. He can make every throw. He runs really well. Like, if he is able to do 75% of what he wants to do, I think the Chiefs could win the game, barring, again, some hideous Andy Reid cock-up involving timeouts and the clock.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. And you can head over to the unnamed temporary sports blog.
That's a crucial mispronunciation. That's really going to hurt us.
temporarysportsblog.com. We will put the link on there after double-checking the spelling.
I was going to say, very carefully. But thank you. I appreciate, everybody appreciates you giving it a push.
Appreciate you coming on. All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. Moving on with our cavalcade of guests today. A lot of guys on the show today.
Bernie Day.
That's right. We're celebrating Hot Boys for Bernie Day. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to.
I just wanted to get Sam to say that.
There you go.
You guys can work with that now.
Yes, exactly. Get to work clipping that. But we've hit like all of the sort of male archetypes today. Right. We're going with the sports guy, and now we'll go to the film guy. Oh, yeah.
And the politics nerds.
Quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Matthew Film Guy, who is the movie critic now. He has been credentialed to go to Sundance. And we're going to talk to him live from Park City, Utah. We'll be right back after this.
Bad movie where there's no crying, handing the keys to me in this red lion, where the lock that you locked in the sweet says there's no prying, when the breath that you breathed in the street screams there's no science, when you look how you looked then to me that I cease lying and fall into silence. This is a life story, so there's no climax, no more new territory, so pull away your max. In the slot that you sliced through the scene, there was no shyness. In the plot that you passed through your teeth, there was no pity, no faded. Film begins on a kid in the big city, and no cut to a costly parade.
We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome the Majority Report film critic, the credentialed Majority Report film critic, calling live from Park City, Utah, the home of the Sundance Film Festival. Matthew Film Guy, welcome back to the program. Matthew?
Are you forgetting something?
Hello?
Are you forgetting something? Oh, gosh!
Forget it! Hold on! There you go, Matthew Film Guy. So, Matthew, Last I heard, you were texting me saying that you were having a little trouble with getting into any of the press screenings. How is Sundance?
Well, Sam, it was really a good time. I enjoyed myself. I think I made a lot of good connections. I handed out a lot of my business card as an editor, and I think it's going to mean big things for me. Our film went over very well, Black Bear, directed by Lawrence Michael Levine, starring Aubrey. I really can't be any more grateful for the opportunity that this film gave me to go to Sundance.
All right, well, talk
as a filmmaker.
Talk closer into your phone. I don't know. Did you get on like a headset or something? Something changed.
This is what I've been doing. Sorry.
This is much better. Okay. What do you mean it was good? Where are you right now?
Oh, no, I'm at home. I spent 6 days there. That was enough. That was good.
Are you serious?
I mean, yeah, I was credentialed for 2 weeks, but, you know, it's expensive to stay there. And, you know, it's really the first weekend is when the real stuff happens. And you go to the parties and you meet the people and then you try to get into movies and then you can't. Home and you're a little sick when you're home, but you know, you're happy.
Are you serious? This is the second time in a row we've had you on. We had you on last week. Why? If you're not at Sundance, we could have done this in a month.
Well, I come back with a lot of really interesting feedback for you and to pass on to the audience just to let them know what it was like to be at Sundance.
Did you see the Hillary documentary?
I saw the outside of the theater.
Did you go to Sundance?
No, I went to Sundance. I have pictures. Listen, I sent you some pictures. Maybe we can go through some of those because it really shows you the story of my time at Sundance. And I did my best to represent the Majority Report. But, you know, technically speaking, you know, whatever is good for Matthew, the film guy, since I represent the show, is technically in the interest of the Majority Report.
Yeah, great. All right, let's look at these pictures. Is your... Okay, this is great. This is a great. This makes me really feel. Hold on, wait a second. Put it back. We got to tell him it's a picture with you. Is that Mary?
Yep, this is us going to the airport. Mary's looking like a movie star, and that's us on the airplane with our two dogs, Dudley and Mabel. They came along. That was a really big part of our weekend.
Well, you brought your dogs on the airplane?
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. They fly with us everywhere. They're emotional support dogs, Sam. Get with it.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. They're amazing citizens of the sky.
All right. So there's a picture of you and Mary and your dogs. It has nothing to do with Sundance. Let's go to the next picture.
Well, no. If it's got to do with Matthew, the film guy, it's got to do with Sundance, and it's got to do with the Majority Report. It's just in the public interest.
Next picture.
Oh, that's the grocery list that people gave me that we stayed at the condo together. You know, we had to furnish six or seven different people from the film stayed with us in this big condo. It was really great.
You're buying $25 average bottle wines. Is your average cost of your wine? That's a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a little fancy, isn't it? $25 a pop.
I think we're worth it. I think we're worth it. And I think a film that got the kind of reviews that Black Bear got, which is like 85% on Rotten Tomatoes right now, I think we deserve at least that kind of bottle of wine.
2% milk, 3 yogurts, 2 bags of spinach. What a very just odd, like a list of, all right, let's go. Caesar, ranch, whatever. Hey. Jesus, Matthew, what is, this is a picture of like beer.
Yeah, oh my God, the beer selection at the Park City Beer Outlet. It's the state liquor store. It's amazing. This is Sundance to me, is this amazing selection of beer. You wouldn't believe what they had there. Imperial stouts, pale ales. I'm not really a beer guy, but I was overwhelmed. And this is, to me, a big part of Sundance.
I think folks are getting a real sense of what happens when your film does well and you start to feel it a little bit. You start to feel your oats a little bit.
Yeah.
Is nice. Working press, Matthew Weiss, critic, the Majority Report with Sam Cedar. Of course, we've heard anything about a single effing film in two segments that we've done with you now.
Well, listen, film festivals, part of it is film, but part of it is festival, you know? You're partying. You're enjoying yourself.
What's the next picture? Great. There's another picture of you with the credit. And this is you in a some type of, like, line? Is that what it is? What's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, I was outside. Yeah, I was outside the one of the film festivals. Oh, that's inside the Filmmaker Center, where you get your credentials and everybody signs up for movies. And really, as soon as you get there, unless you were there like the day before. So I did my best, but I barely got into any movies. I think I saw one movie, but we'll get to that.
What?
Besides my own. I went to two screenings of my own movie.
You went to one other movie?
Yeah, and that was just because I knew the director who knew the actor in it. So, but that movie wasn't that great. But it's the thought that counts. It's the attempt.
Go to the next one. Are you being serious? There's a pair of socks. That's great.
And they got amazing swag at Sundance. The swag at Sundance is like really, really great.
And there's an E
warm
wait
socks because it's cold.
Right. There's an internal error has occurred.
That's what happens when you try to get tickets. That's what happens on the app. We try to get tickets to the Taylor Swift documentary and it like blew up the app. We try to get tickets to some of the other films and there's just too much demand.
What's the next picture? Great. As a picture of you guys about to order some food in some completely generic looking restaurant.
That really is the highest. I mean, film critics need food. You know, actors, those are some of the actors and other crew members in the film. And we hung out a lot at this restaurant because it just had seats.
Next one. Oh, there's a picture of Black Bear, like the Facebook, I guess, right? Is that what it is?
Is it?
I don't know.
Facebook?
And now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what they give. That's what they give out to all the critics and stuff before the movie. And this is where it starts to get really exciting because there we are. There's Aubrey Plaza down at the end of the row there. We're waiting for the premiere.
Who's Aubrey
really
Plaza?
Exciting.
Who is Aubrey Plaza?
Aubrey Plaza, she is the star of screen and television who started in Black Bear. She is the one that you and Jamie always have to have the conversation about how you didn't see Parks and Rec about.
Oh,
that's her.
All right. Fair enough. And so she's an actress. And is that the whole... Who's that up on stage? There's Matthew up on stage.
Okay. Yep. So that's at the end of the premiere. We did a little Q&A and that's everybody. That's right to left. That's Sarah Gadon, Chris Abbott, Aubrey Plaza, Lawrence Levine, the director, Rob Leitzel, the DP, and your own humble Matthew Film Guy, the editor.
Wow. There you go. And there's
and
another,
if you notice, I have
the same
two.
Picture.
If you notice, I have two. Nobody else has theirs on because they're not so gauche, but I have two credentials on, which is better than one.
Right. Yeah. One of them was the there's a picture of you looking concerned. Nice. Okay. And there's a picture of the audience. There's a picture of you at the restaurant again. That's great.
Restaurant. Did I mention how great that restaurant was?
You did. And here's one of a waiting room, apparently.
No, that's our condo. That's where everybody hung out and we were all enjoying each other's company. That's a lot of the cast and crew that stayed with us. They're all very talented actors. And you can see Dudley, my dog, down at the bottom there.
Mm-hmm.
There we are at the condo enjoying ourselves. Yeah,
like
that,
fun.
This is a picture of Sundance. When you want to know what is Sundance like, it's this.
Great.
Yes.
Jacuzzi? We had a jacuzzi. Did I mention that?
Yeah, who's that in the jacuzzi? Was that Mary?
That's Mary. That's Mary. There she is.
A big glass of wine. And
having a nice glass of wine. Oh, yeah. Wine in the jacuzzi.
Yep. This is great. And there's people getting picked up in the buses and then back at the airport.
Okay.
Great.
Now those buses, that is the Hillary Clinton movie.
Oh,
that
great.
That is the outside of the Hillary Clinton movie. That is as close as I got. And there's me standing in the press line moments before I am told that the Majority Report cannot be let in.
Great. And there you are with your badge, and there's a picture of a car. Great. And there's okay, keep going. Nice. That's nice. Here you go. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's good, right?
Great.
That's the street. So after you get out of the Oh, that's a good message I got.
Yeah, yeah. Keep going. Great. That's it. All right. Terrific. Oh, Matthew, this was so worth it.
Wait, we're not done.
Yeah, no, we're done.
Oh, wow. I recognize that.
Who's that guy?
My cousin.
I don't know where you're at.
My cousin played for this team. This is, I forget what team is. But,
oh, Matt recognizes
the Norfolk Tides.
Hat.
It's a Norfolk Tides hat.
Norfolk Tides. That's exciting. That's super exciting.
That's Kevin. He was in our movie.
Whatever. All right. Terrific.
You didn't even get to when I met the guy from Uncut Gems. Did you see Uncut Gems?
Yeah, I did. What guy? Adam Sandler?
The bad guy. No, the other guy.
Oh, all right. Well, how many pictures? I mean, like, honestly. Yeah, there he is. All right, there's that guy. Okay, good. Yeah, that's exciting.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, all right. Matthew, huge.
Film guy, this has been really edifying. You saw one movie. Can't tell us anything that happened at Sundance. I was very excited at the prospect of, like, getting you a film critic badge. And all we did is got, like...
I was, too.
Like, photos of, like, really nothing that had to do with anything except for you going on vacation and partying.
I mean, again, Sam, my career as an editor and a filmmaker only benefits the Majority Report. So if I do something in my own interest, it is ipso facto helpful to the Majority Report. Get it?
Yeah, I know. I get it. Well, Matthew, film guy, congratulations. Where can we see Black Bear?
Well, Black Bear right now, it's got, if you go to the end of the pictures, you can see all the great reviews that it's getting. You can check out the reviews right now. But right now, it's still on the festival circuit until people decide to fork up some money to pay for it and distribute it. We're fielding offers right now. I can't really talk about that. Mm, but it is going to be...
That's the only interesting thing that you have to report, and you can't talk about it.
Well, that would be premature for me, because there's nothing to announce yet. But it gets a lot of buzz from the festivals, and, you know, all those great reviews, I'm sure, anytime now will result in a distributor.
All right. Well, I hope that's the case.
Let me wait. I have to tell you one other thing, Sam. I handled the Q&A at the Salt Lake City screening. Some of the screenings go to Salt Lake City from Park City, and it was late at night, and it's not really something that other filmmakers and actors want to go to, but they let Matthew, the editor, go. And before I sit down in the theater, one of the pictures is if you scroll through, you'll see the Q&A there.
We won't.
Someone in the audience walks up to me and goes, "Are you Matthew Film Guy?" And apparently they had heard my talking about the film earlier that day on the Majority Report. That was last Friday. And they came out to see the film. The guy's name is Kyle. And he asked a very nice question. And I handled the Q&A. And we had a chat. So I want you to know where his reach extends to the films that show at Sundance,
well,
for sure.
That's very exciting. And I'm glad that it went well. I hope the movie gets purchased and that you... This will lead to other opportunities for you to go to film festivals and report on it for us, because this has been so successful.
Did I tell you that I got a free Heineken beer for life card at one of the parties?
What?
Oh, yeah.
How does that work?
Pictures you skipped over.
How does that work?
So it's a promotion.
Do you go into a bar and you get a free Heineken beer wherever you are?
No, I have to give them like a few days to a week heads up. And if I'm having a party or a function, I call this number that's on this golden card. And they basically just furnish you with any of the Heineken brands, Red Stripe, Amstel Light.
Wow. For free?
Next time the Majority Report's having a function, I think it's all going to pay off, this little press pass that you
gave
me.
We're going to use that for sure. That's the best thing. You should have led with that.
You almost blew it, but it's still going to pay off for you.
All right.
There you go.
We got it all on tape. Matthew Film Guy, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon, buddy. Congrats.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
All right. Black Bear, folks. Black Bear, check it out. All right. We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will play some clips of Donald Trump in Iowa last night. We'll talk a little bit more about impeachment. A couple of other stories that are just sort of stunning about Trump's border wall. This opioid story. I know that Michael may have talked about it briefly yesterday, but I can't get over this. Where this essentially the software maker doing medical records basically got a product placement fee from, it's suspected, Purdue Pharma to push opioids on doctors. I mean, it's just, it's nuts.
The new opportunities from Silicon Valley.
It is, it seems to be basically the functional equivalent of, you know, getting paid advertising placement in a Google search without saying that it's an ad and with it popping up. Well, it's nuts. We'll talk about that in a bit. All right. Just a reminder, folks, you can support the show by going to be becoming a member. Join themajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget the AM Quickie is available at amquickie.com. Check out our friend Nomi Keys' new show, The Nomi Key Show. We'll put a link to that in our podcast description and our YouTube description. Nomi Key will join us for our coverage Monday night of the Iowa caucus results. Next week, we're going to be doing Iowa caucus live. We're going to do a show on Monday. I'm not sure what's going to happen on Tuesday during the day, but certainly at night we'll be doing the State of the Union, and then we'll be probably doing a show on Wednesday, and then Friday night we're going to do live coverage of the debate in New Hampshire, which should be interesting based upon the results of Iowa, which we don't know yet, but we'll see. It's a crazy week or two coming up, folks, so hang with us. In the meantime, check out TMBS. Has Michael released the second part of the Lula interview yet?
I believe it went up last night.
Okay, so you check out patreon.com/TMBS or Michael Brooks Show on YouTube to check out that Lula thing.
Live tonight as well.
Oh.
TMBS live.
Oh, live
on
tonight.
Friday night.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize. So you can check out the YouTube channel for that. And you can check out the Intifada at patreon.com. The Intifada. It has been quarantined, but you are safe to listen to it. You will not get the flu. And Literary Hangover, Matt?
Yeah, I just recorded another poem, Ebenezer Cook's Bacon's Rebellion poem from 1731. So that's up for patrons. I'm going to put it out for everybody the next 24 hours. So, and then that's going to be the next episode. So look forward to that.
All right, quick break, fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, back. Back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break for people.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck. Reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Hell out of bank. Hell out of bank. Hell out of bank. Hell out of bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black Africans. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, black.
doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on!
Blast blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.